It's Jim, it's the World of Bonds. It's Monday the 18th of March 2024. This is for professional investors only and never ever investment advice. Tomorrow could be the day that the Bank of Japan finally exits from its negative interest rate policy, or NIRP. Rates have been negative in Japan for 8 years now, and this would be the first rise in Japanese interest rates since 2007. So why now? Well, I don't think you could argue that momentum in the Japanese economy is gangbusters for the past few months. It's better than it was for a long period of time, but some of the exuberance that people are expecting hasn't really materialized. But when it comes to wages, there is definite progress in the stated government aim to see a sustained improvement upwards in wages and incomes. Now, the Japanese trade union group Rengo, which really represents workers in the biggest firms in Japan, Rengo says that it has seen wage demands averaging 5.85% from workers, and wage demands haven't been that high, haven't even been over 5% for 3 decades now. Smaller companies, though, which account for over two-thirds of Japanese workers effectively, don't apparently have as strong ability to be able to pay that sort of level. They don't have pricing power and probably will come through with smaller pay hikes, but nevertheless, this is expected to be the strongest shunto wage round in living memory. Shunto, the wage round, the word itself means spring wage offensive. So the strength so far of the Shunto wage reports has led most street economists to bring their rate hike calls forward from April to this week. So this is happening quite quickly, that people now think that this is a story that happens over the next couple of days. And reports that a hike is likely in the Nikkei newspaper have kind of cemented that, because the Nikkei, if it's not in the Nikkei, then it's not thought to have been, messaged by the Bank of Japan to journalists. You know, the Nikkei newspaper is regarded as where Bank of Japan policy does make its first appearance. So it appears that its appearance, I think yesterday, confirms the view that it will be this week that NIRP disappears. What happens then? Well, then there's the question of when you move to positive interest rates and when we get a future 25 basis point hike. There is a solitary 25 basis point Japanese rate hike in the money market curve on WIRP by the end of 2024, and that's very much backloaded to the end of the year. So an expectation that that would happen. But then there's also to be discussed the end or a reduction in quantitative easing in Japan, Rinban operation. As I'm giving definitions here, Rinban means rotation or turn. Not quite sure how that links to the QE that happens, but nevertheless, that's what Rinban means. And it's the way in which the Bank of Japan buys JGBs from the bond market, partly in support of its yield curve control objectives. Remember that YCC objective that currently is set at keeping the 10-year JGB yield effectively below 1%. So what does the current Japanese yield curve look like, so we can compare it in a week or so's time and see what's happened post the end of NIRP? Well, the target rate for the Bank of Japan's short rate is minus 0.1%. 2-year JGB yields are at 19 basis points, 5s at 38, 10s at 77, and the 30-year is up at 1.83%, which is roughly the highest level for over a decade now, since 2013 for sure. Now, you might have expected this rate hike optimism to be yen positive at the moment. Alas, not. So right now the yen is at 149.16 against the US dollar. It had got down to about 146-ish earlier this month, so it's sold off somewhat over the past few days, not quite up to the highs that it got at during the second half of February, but nevertheless, it's certainly weaker over the past few days. And partly that weakness is around the change in rate expectations, not in Japan, but elsewhere, and especially in the United States, where bonds had that double whammy at the end of last week from a marginally stronger CPI number than people had anticipated. And also we had later on in the week PPI, that's the producer prices index, so the kind of inputs into CPI at the end of the day. And they very much disappointed the market. So February's PPI year on year was up 1.6% compared to 1.1% expected, and on a monthly basis we had twice the expected monthly gain of 0.6 versus 0.3 that was expected. So the probabilities of May, June and July Fed cuts are leaking lower as disappointing news for the Fed just keeps on coming. And bond yields last week, looking at the 10 years, started the week roughly at 4.07, ended the week at 4.3. So, you know, a very disappointing week for the 10-year, not quite at the year's high, but not a million miles away from it in the States. So, talking of the Fed, we do, as well as Bank of Japan meeting this week, we have FOMC, that comes middle of this week. And whilst we're not going to get a rate move this week, we might see the dot plot change. Remember, every time the Fed meets, they put out dots reflecting where each individual voting member of the Fed thinks that rates will be over the short term, slightly longer short term, and also the very long term. And that very long term dot plot can be regarded as a kind of proxy for where the Fed thinks that our star in nominal terms will be in the very long term. And so our star, remember, is the long-term neutral rate of interest in the US economy, i.e. the rate of interest that can generate full employment but without generating inflation effectively. So currently the long-term dot from the Fed is at 2.5%, and it's been there for a while. But market estimates of R star, or equivalent sort of views of where the long-term dot can be, are much higher. You can look at this by looking at forward rates. So you could look at, say, the 10-year forward rate in bond space for treasuries, or probably better measure at the moment, given that the supply wave that's coming in US treasuries maybe distorts that yield curve. You get steeper yield curves generally with lots more government bond issuance. If you look at the swaps forward, so 10-year forward and interest rate swaps, which have the same credit risk nowadays as treasuries, given that they're centrally cleared and daily collateralized. So anyway, the long-term OIS swap is way below the treasury swap, but it's still 100 basis points higher than the Fed dot. So you would expect, I think, some movement in the long-term dots from the Fed. I mean, it should be a case that the Fed sits down every decade, really, and comes up with a view of what those dots would be, only really changing it where you get a seismic shift in something like trade policy, and maybe there's something in that. You know, Donald Trump import tariffs might raise inflationary pressures or slow global trade. Geopolitical stuff, demographic stuff. The long-term demand and supply of savings and investment effectively determine what the long-term dot will be. But nevertheless, I think that the Fed's dots do kind of follow the market somewhat, rather than being set in this kind of long-term view of where the neutral rate of borrowing should be. So I think you might see some movement there in the dots, but probably not very significantly. Right, the very last thing I'll talk about today is really the weather for those of us, and probably about two-thirds or 60% of people who listen to this podcast are in the UK and will know just how grisly the rain has been this year. It's felt like it's just been torrential the entire year to date. Good interviews on the Radio 4 Today program, I think on Friday, talking about the impact that that's having on farmers, and they were down in Somerset on the Somerset Levels, where they say it's been flooded. You know, it effectively, if you get the train down there, it's as if you're getting a train across the sea for quite long periods of time. And what does that mean for crops, and what's it mean for food prices in the UK later this year? So what heavy rain means is that the farmers down there reported they have been unable to plant crops on around about 15 to 20% of the land down there. So immediately that's going to have a big impact on supply of crops. The other big danger I hadn't appreciated was that even if we get a hot summer, as we have been getting hot summers over the past few years, that's not necessarily good news. So for instance, for wheat, when you have a very wet winter, it means that wheat doesn't need to put down very deep roots. You know, the roots of the crop just sit very close to the surface because there's plentiful water. It doesn't need to thrive down and drill down to try and find water. What that means is when you then get a hot summer, the top soil, the area that nearest the surface, dries out very, very quickly. The root system isn't deep enough to be able to access the water, which is further down, and you get low yields and lots of bad harvests. So actually, a wet winter and a hot summer isn't going to be good news for harvests either. And you know, so thinking of inflationary trends, this could be something that the Bank of England and others will be nervous about: food price inflation due to weather effects in the UK later this year. Also starting to see some signs of other commodity prices. I saw this morning someone put out a note about copper and some inflation showing through in there too. So maybe the PPI number we got from the States is the first sign of some more inflation in the pipeline. So something else for us all to worry about. Have good weeks. Bye.